Michael says I can go first this time, and now that we've had our ears blasted out by the McCoy theme, because I left the DVD up too loud.
I mean, damn. The neighbors next door are going, what the hell?
We literally, we both jumped.
Oh, goodness.
That opening note is so loud.
Hey anyway, there.
Hey, this is... Did I already introduce myself?
Yes, you did.
Oh, it's me again.
And this is Michael Hickerson, and as we're known around the internet, those two chatty Americans with a microphone. Or as we like to call ourselves, two insane fans. And this is our commentary on...
Ghostlight.
Or as one of the most confusing Doctor Who episodes ever made.
Yeah, it really is. And I'm not quite sure why I like it so much as a result.
Well, it's very, very well done.
Yeah.
It's very dark.
It is very dark. And, it's worth pointing out right away, the very first time I saw this story was a movie format version from Ohio PBS. It came on a tape somebody sent me. And I couldn't fathom it even remotely because, well, A, it's a really confusing story. But B, the sound mix on Ghostlight, at least in the compilation version that made the PBS rounds for so many years, was so atrocious you could not hear the dialogue over the music.
Yeah, I seem to remember that at this point, because I think I saw that same one, that they had a stereo mix, and they hadn't mixed the stereo mix that well.
Right.
Because I found, goodness, I remember the first time I saw it, I actually saw it on Maryland Public Television, and I was very excited, because we'd just seen season 25 within like the last 6-8 months, and they got season 26, and I had really enjoyed season 25. I even liked Happiness Patrol. Okay, I didn't like Silver Nemesis, but that's not the point. But I was very excited. I was like, oh, new Doctor Who, yay! I remember watching this like one Sunday afternoon, because I had taped it on Saturday night. It came on about 2 a.m. And I got to the end of it, and I went, I know something happened just there, but what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
And I remember that I had to hook up my VCR through my stereo and play with the balance levels, and basically, like, watch it when no one else was home, because you had to, like, blast it at about 10 to hear some of the dialogue.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I recall easy 50% of the dialogue being totally obscured by music.
Which is interesting, because in preparation for this commentary, yes, look, I actually prepared this time.
We both did. It's crazy.
I know, instead of just making it up as we go along, which might be more fun.
Yeah, but Ghostlight needs preparation.
I was watching, there's an extra on this DVD where they talk to everyone, a lot of the people who were involved, and Mark Ayers is one of them, and he said he did not intend for the background music to be as loud as it was.
Right.
And that Alan Waring had done it, or when he first saw the cut, and it was so incredibly loud. So I get the impression that the audio mix was incredibly loud, even when it aired in the UK.
Yeah.
For the first time.
Yeah, and it's still, I think he's balanced it out better, but it's still loud. And at least it's a good score. I mean,
yeah.
This is a very good score, in my opinion.
This is one of the great... This is one of those... You know, in the J&T years, the music becomes very much more obvious.
Yeah, well, it becomes... it has more character of its own. And this is one of the scores I've got on CD that I'm glad to have on CD, even though I don't play it very late at night, because it's kind of creepy.
It's good stuff. It's continuing the theme, and this is actually the last Doctor Who story ever filmed for the classic series.
It is indeed. So we're kind of, in a reverse way, we're continuing because the last one we commented on was the TV movie, which would be the next official Doctor Who put into production.
Ah, and there's Gwendolyn. Did you know? Have you watched through this, the trivia track?
Yes, I usually do when I get my DVDs. Okay. I usually watch them right away with that, because I've seen the stories before.
So you know that they misspelled the actress's name
and
the first time?
There's even an Easter egg on here where you can see those original endings.
I'm going to take their word for it.
Yeah, it's really fascinating.
Which I can understand her being very upset about.
Oh, yeah. I actually auditioned for something the other day, and people kept referring to me as, by a different last name than the one I've got.
They called you Smith?
Yeah, funny. a similar name, but not the same one, and it's actually, there's a girl on campus who has that name, and I was like, no, that's the other girl, you know, the socialist, her, not me, and it got really sort of upsetting, so, anyway, that's my
Yeah, this was the season when McCoy got tired, he talks about it in the DVD, I wanted Sophie to have more to do, and I hate to go, no, bull. I remember at the time you said, I'm tired of saying all this techno babble, so I'll go, so I'll pretend like, so he decided to have Sophie Aldred's ace be more of the student, so he wouldn't have to say all this gobbledygook, and she would.
Right, so it's like, so Ace, what do you think is going on here?
Yes. And, so she had to memorize well, pages
Professor.
Of techno babble.
And she would say to him, go, yes, right.
Yeah. Which is brilliant. It's good work if you can get it.
Yeah.
Apparently he never liked the question mark jumper.
No, he said that a lot of times. He really hates the question mark jumper. And I'm with him.
It was
cute when I was
cool.
10. The hat is his, so he obviously likes the hat. And I think he likes the umbrella. I like the umbrella. It's a little more... I almost said the word understated.
Yeah, well,
but it's...
anything's understated compared to Colin Baker's costume.
Oh, anything's really understated compared to that damn jumper.
Well, that is true. But J&T really like to have the question marks.
And the funny thing is, I have like developed this really obsessive desire for question mark things because of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
But I don't really think it fits Doctor Who that well. I mean, as a little tiny thing, it's okay. But, you know, covering him in question marks is kind of dumb.
Well, Davison and Colin Baker, and even Tom Baker in his last year, had him on the
collar. That's okay. That's not, like, a big deal.
It was kind of fun. It was kind of, you know.
Yeah. Actually, did Colin? Colin did have him on the collar, didn't he?
I think so. I think they all did when J&T came in. That's how you knew how J&T was behind it.
Right. Colin also had the suspenders, didn't he? Question mark suspenders.
Oh, yes. From Vengeance on Varos.
Yes. But I have a question mark umbrella, which I take around campus all the time, and people just adore it after the obligatory Batman joke.
Do you smack them with it?
Pretty much. Except for the girls, because they usually think it's really awesome and chicks dig the umbrella, and it's all good.
Note to self, get the question mark umbrella. Okay.
One person thought I was making an Avengers statement, which was sort of interesting. Nobody has yet pegged it as a Doctor Who umbrella, which I think is really funny. But I was thinking about this morning because I just bought a little a brooch, like a 1930s brooch, which is a question mark. I was like, oh, I wonder why I bought this. It's because it's 10 years old. I thought question marks were really awesome.
Well, and they still are.
Still kind of do.
In moderation.
Yeah, right. It's a little, like, detailed or cool. But...
Now, here we go. I guess we should actually maybe tell them what's going on screen, so in case they're trying to sync up.
Well, I mean, they should have synced up with us.
Shouting about them.
Well, you didn't hear us actually scream, which was the fun part. But,
Oh, goodness.
Oh, Tetsy Fly. Yeah. Tetsy Fly, that was that moment just there, pretty much as I said it.
Yes.
One thing I think is interesting about this story, and I'm just going to speak kind of randomly.
Okay.
Now, I have, aside from the DVD, I have the Ghostlight script book.
Yes.
Which was put out by Titan in, 1992 or so. Look it up, Michael.
I'll look it up while you discuss.
And I think for anyone who's really interested in Ghostlight...
first edition, June 1993.
Not close enough. For anyone who's really interested in Ghostlight, you should seek out a copy of this thing. Because it has a... Even though it's really just a transcript, all the Titan books are transcripts... It does have a significant section at the end where Mark Platt talks about his story in much the same way he does on the DVD, but it also includes script extracts, including scenes that were never filmed at all. And one of the interesting things he mentions is that basically his two favorite stories are The Talons of Wang Chiang,
which is one
kind of obvious because right now the Doctor has just made his Chinese fowling piece joke.
Yes.
And Evil of the Daleks.
Which, there are no Daleks in this.
No, but I think the interpretation of the Doctor... See, this is where I come to with McCoy's Doctor. Now, we all know that McCoy is Michael's favorite Doctor.
Oh, yes. And if you don't know that, you should go back and listen to other commentaries where we say this.
And Michael makes it really, really obvious.
Yes.
He is not my favorite by a very large degree. And part of that is I dislike the godlike way in which they often treated his character. I don't like that he suddenly is able to destroy whole worlds and that he can, you know, knock you unconscious with a finger.
That's just cool.
But it's just overkill. But what's interesting about this story is it takes some of those dark elements, but it makes them more human somehow. And one of the few stories that had done this in the past, where the Doctor manipulates people on a very, very personal level and manipulates his companion to basically teach them a lesson, is The Evil of the Daleks, where Troughton manipulates Jamie. Yeah. And I just think that's kind of interesting. And it's so different from what became The New Adventures, where he, you know, juggled people and...
Or he was just a bastard.
He was just a bastard.
So, I mean...
Which could have worked for 10 books, but for 40 books or 45 books...
Oh, I liked it. I enjoyed that. Of course, Ace becomes...
really old.
Ace becomes a little bit... Well, but did you read them month by month, or did you read them in a large chunk in a row?
I came in about 1995, so the ones before 1995, I just kind of read in a bad order.
So... I just wondering, you know, because I read them as they were coming out, so it may not have disturbed me as much as if I had read large chunks of them in a row.
That's true. That's true.
You know, it's kind of like, you know, when you do watch a Pertwee story, which we might do later and comment on, or we might have already done. Maybe we'll put Easter eggs in the commentary so you can figure out what order we recorded them in. But those early stories were not intended for you to watch them in one big giant chunk.
That's true.
And I wonder if it's the same thing with the books.
You know, I think that's possible. I still have all the New Adventures in a box.
Well, you have the pit?
I have them all.
You have the pit?
Yep.
I'm sorry.
I've never read the pit.
Well, it rhymes with something. That's what it is.
I've never read about six of them, which is weird, including the Time Worms. I've never read the Time Worms. Oh, well.
Yeah, I remember when those came out, and they're like, oh, they're going to be adult. And apparently adult meant that we would have scenes where Ace ran around
in the nude, wasn't that it?
Yeah. Or her underwear. And I remember, oh, what was the one?
No, I think it was the nude, because there was this big debate that I've read about that John Peel described her areolas.
Hi, kids!
Yeah.
No, but there was one. What was it? Oh, goodness. I think it was Lucifer Rising, where the F word is used in the book.
Transit.
Transit used it, but now there was another one where it... Because I remember reading along, and you get to a point where one of the characters, like, I believe it's his mom, is manipulating and doing things, and he says, F you, Mom!
Oops.
And you're kind of, at the end of the chapter, and you're kind of like, I was kind of like going, this is a Doctor Who book. You know, not that you can't have cussing in Doctor Who commentaries.
Well,
it just didn't seem in the right place.
I felt the New Adventures all too often descended into sort of fan teenageness. In that regard, the swearing and the violence and the sex. But there were some of them that were genuinely good.
I think the majority of them were genuinely good.
Yeah, we'll leave that to debate.
But anyway, I
particularly like some of the later ones where the Doctor starts paying for all these manipulations he's been doing. But this is the story that I think really kind of touched all that off.
Yeah.
Even though it kind of becomes much, much bigger. In fact, it evolves, which brings us back to Ghost Light.
Yes, which is, this was the season of the testing of Ace.
Mm-hmm.
Making Ace confront things.
Yes, people actually refer to this and Fenric and Survival as the Ace Trilogy.
Which is interesting, because these were filmed out of order.
That's right, this was the last of them filmed.
Krista Fenric was supposed to start off the season.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't.
Nope.
Instead we got Battlefield.
Yeah, okay.
Which is good, and I guess I just remember when Battlefield came on. There was they really played
in a really dopey way.
They played with the Doctor Who fan community because they were. Nicholas Courtney went out around doing interviews. Oh yes, the Brigadier dies in episode 4, and I was like, no, you can't kill the Brigadier. And I remember when he lived, I was like, damn it, they didn't kill him. That sucks. I was kind of pissed because you were expecting him to die in the end of the episode.
Right.
So what makes Ghost Light so good?
Make Ghost Light so good. I think it... There's this old tenet of writing that says you shouldn't presume information upon your audience.
Yeah.
You know, you shouldn't need to know extra information before watching something to understand it.
Yes.
Which Ghost Light kind of requires you to do. Or asks you to do. But at the same time, I find that level of intelligence...
Yeah.
That it... Ghost Light sort of presumes you have the intelligence to follow it. I find that interesting.
Well,
it's not like it needs to, like, you know, lay it all out for you with breadcrumbs.
I don't understand, you know, I'm not sure that if I was in the UK and this was aired over 3 consecutive weeks, I'm not sure with a week gap in between stories that I could follow the story.
No, I'm not I actually think this is one of the few Doctor Who stories that maybe works better.
This was one that was made for the video age where,
yeah,
you know, there's this criticism leveled at the JNT years at times that... they knew that Dr. Ruffians were recording them and watching them multiple times, and they
trended
the story towards that. Because I'm trying to remember how many times, because Ghostlight is one of those, like, people will ask me, like, well, what happened? What happened in the story? You know, can you explain it to me? And I said, you just got to watch it, and you got to watch it, and you got to watch it. And then it's either going to, I think it was about the third or fourth time where it clicked, and I went, oh!
Yeah.
Oh, that's what it's about.
It took me a long
time. It's good.
I mean, it took me, I had to finally understand the whole thing about how Josiah and Control are the same creature.
Yes.
And that one of them is a control in the experiment, and one of them is the actual experiment.
And it's not abundantly clear.
It's not abundantly clear. You really do have to read between the lines, and, you know.
This is kind of like, to compare to literature, Dune. Dune assumes that you can, the book, before the Kevin J. Anderson books get a hold and treat you like an idiot, Dune assumes that you'll remember things later in the book and can piece things together.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, most good literature will do that. Will assume that you're not an idiot, that you can put things together. And Ghostlight assumes that you're going to pay attention.
Oh, Ghostlight definitely assumes it. And I don't think it was quite written that way, at least to the intensity that it's become, because they had to cut it down so much.
Well, and they were going to try and, on the DVD they talk about, they wanted to maybe push it to 4 episodes.
Right.
And I guess my question is, could you do 4 episodes, or would it be stretching it too much?
I think you probably could.
Yeah.
However, the way it was written, I think you would lose the pacing somewhere.
Yeah.
I think there's certainly enough material for it.
Well, if you have to go to the bathroom during this story, you better pause. Because if you have to leave the room and come back, you're going to miss...
Well, we were trying to... There's a local group here. Not really so much a group, but a bunch of guys who get together on Saturday night at the local comic book shop, and we watch Doctor Who for an hour or two. And it's a little more Doctor Who than I typically like to watch. I generally come in towards the end and watch a couple episodes.
Yeah.
Because I'm of that age where I really prefer Doctor Who in, like, 1 or 2 episode chunks.
This is the only one... This and Curse of Fenric are really only of the two that I can watch all in a chunk.
That's interesting. And I brought some DVDs with me this last time, well, a couple weeks ago. And the guy who's always there, Dave, he said, oh, let's watch Ghostlight. And, so me and him and some other guys were trying to watch Ghostlight, and we fell into a little bit of a tangent with our conversation. It doesn't work.
Yeah,
you can't do that. You can do that with a Pertwee story, and you can do, like, little MST3K comments and stuff. Yeah. Ghostlight requires you to be there.
Yes.
And be fully involved in it. For better or worse. He's just mad.
Now, we're coming up to one of my favorite scenes from the McCoy years.
Okay.
Here it is right here, where the doctor comes in to talk to Ace.
Oh, yes.
And she asks him what scares him, and he goes through the litany of things that scare him. I just think it's just a very cool...
It is.
McCoy is very good at the quiet moments, the quiet...
He's very good at quiet anger. He absolutely sucks at angry anger.
You mean like survival?
And also Curse of Fenric, you know, evil from before the dawn of time.
Well, yeah, that is. But this is very subdued.
Yeah, to a large degree, Ghostlight is subdued. There's one or two little embarrassing bits, but that's about it. This is also beautifully lit, I might add.
Yeah. Well, just,
dark.
The way he moves around Ace and the camera movement, which, it was interesting we were talking about before we came on, before we went live.
That screamed.
Yes. Well, and boy, and no, we didn't save it, so it won't be presented as an Easter egg somewhere.
Sadly, no. It's too bad, really.
Yes, it was quite amusing. But Alan Waring was a good director. I think he really... The stories he did all have a very interesting visual style.
Mm. What are the other ones he did?
Greatest Show in the Galaxy.
Okay.
Which benefited from the fact that they had to shut down the studios and film Intense.
Right.
And then he also did Survival.
Right. I haven't seen Greatest Show in years, but I have seen Survival fairly recently. And that one was much better than I remembered. To be honest, it has a good visual style to it.
Isn't that rumored to be the next McCoy to come out on DVD?
Yeah, it is. There's some stuff that sucks. The Cheetah people look kind of fake.
Yeah, but in 1989, they were looking pretty good.
It's one of the few times that, like, an alien planet looks kind of alien.
Yeah.
And the Master is, like, genuinely scary for the first time in a decade. And...
Now, this song was a happy accident. Because I have this vision of I don't know why I had this vision of this script, because everything is so detailed of, that Mark Platt had picked out that exact song somehow.
Right.
You know, when you see it and you're like, wow, that's really a smart choice, and it just happened that the BBC happened to have rights to it and used it, because it sort of fit, but it fits in so well with the story of monkeys in the zoo and evolution. You're like, damn. So maybe G&T picked out and he did something right.
Yeah.
We know it wasn't Eric Sayward doing it. So, because...
Yeah. Well, Eric Sayward was long gone, but
yes, as you can tell, because the stories assume that you're not an idiot. It's not Time Lash.
Well, the stories also aren't just totally action-based. I mean, this is a fairly intellectual story.
Yeah.
You can say whatever you want about Ghost Life, but like I said, you know, it requires you to be committed to figuring it out. It's like a puzzle.
Oh, yeah. And I guess we've talked all this time. We've even talked about Sophie Aldred, who is probably my favorite... Okay, I know some of you are going, oh my god. But actually my favorite companion. Ace is probably my favorite companion.
I think Ace... I actually rather like the Seventh Doctor. Gets better as she goes on.
Well...
I mean, this story, she's quite good.
I think it's maybe...
Fenric, she's mostly quite good, except for that very weird seduction scene that I've never understood.
That's good. Well, we can debate that, but that'll be on our Fenric commentary.
Survival, she's good. But, it takes them like a season to have her stop going, you know, toe rag and just wielding weapons, which just gets sort of silly.
I think there was a chemistry between she and McCoy that worked very well that just was missing. You know, maybe it was this. I just wonder if it was my reaction. Part of my reaction to her was watching through them, and you know, as they came out, quote unquote. And seeing how just miscast Bonnie Langford was. Because she just didn't have any chemistry with the cast at all. It just seemed like... You know...
Although, Bonnie Langford has since proven herself in the big
finishes. Oh, yeah.
But Sophie Aldred and Sylvester McCoy have, I think, an equality.
And I just wonder if Cardinal had an idea of what he wanted to do with Ace before they started.
Possibly.
You know, unlike... Where it seemed like Bonnie Langford was brought in because J&T really, really liked her.
Right.
And... I don't care if she fits the role or not. She's going to be on my show.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Whereas Sophie Aldred was kind of cast, and she kind of changes a little bit from Dragonfire. But,
she definitely does.
Yeah, you know, but it was at the end of the season, so they had time to kind of sculpt and create her character.
And then it progresses even more between 25 and 26.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I find portions of Remembrance of the Daleks extremely embarrassing, where she, you know, is shouting and doing all that stuff. But for the most part, she's quite believable in these, like, last three stories.
And even if you're talking about, you know, they start the theme of confronting fears with Greatest Show. Because the Doctor takes her to the circus, seeing through her false bravado. Oh, and here's the J&T moment.
Yeah, this bit just doesn't make any sense, and that's because J&T required it.
Well, you have to have a cliffhanger.
You have to have monsters, apparently. And,
even though it makes no sense.
It makes no sense for these to be Josiah's husks. I'm so sorry.
But thanks, J&T.
It just adds one more layer of confusion to the whole thing, unfortunately.
So.
And I mean, Andrew Cardinal tries to explain they have some sort of life force left over. Yeah, whatever the hell.
Yeah, it's like his... I don't know. So, we haven't seen Control yet.
Well, we're certainly talking enough for...
We're at the end of the first episode already.
Yeah, I mean, we were a little worried that maybe we could kind of bog down, and I had like an hour and a half of sleep last night,
yeah,
and we thought it'd be kind of crappy. So
if Sarah goes to sleep, well, you know, I'll keep on talking.
You know what helps from going to sleep?
Beer?
Well, the Roman Polanski method of having a little square of chocolate.
Oh, and look, we have little skitters of chocolate.
See, Michael was a nice guy and brought me chocolate.
That's right. Getting ready to wrap up episode one, and we'll stop so that in case something happens to episode one, we don't have to re-record it. The whole story.
Aw, should we? Okay.
Yeah.
So, see you in a couple
for us
minutes,
a few
folks.
Minutes are going to pass, but for you, only seconds.
Wow.
Hello there.
And we're back for part two.
Of Ghostlight. Written by Mark Platt.
It's going to sound really funny if everybody's listening to the edited track where all three episodes are put together, but okay.
It hasn't stopped us before.
Not really. So what about this title sequence?
I like the McCoy years title sequence.
I like the TARDIS. That's about it. I mean, in the bubble.
It's pretty cool.
I don't really like the theme tune.
This is when the British fans, I remember saying that this theme song showed that J&T was trying too hard to get it to sell to American audiences because the way it was sold the majority of time was in movie format. And if you saw movie format of episodes, the credits would cut at weird points because it would...
Right.
Because it would, you know, it would just cut off where it said episode 2 and you wouldn't get the whole theme. And they said this one was easier to assemble together into a movie format because you didn't have to edit out the part, the episode title, and it wasn't as obvious that it was filmed that
way. Oh, I see, yeah.
If that makes sense. So they said it was...
Because it doesn't fade in.
Yes. So these stories were written for the Americans and to sell to the American audience, and J&T should be shot and killed.
Interesting.
But it was every other week something J&T should be shot and killed for.
I don't hate the theme or the sequence. I just don't like them particularly. I thought the sequence itself was awesome when I was 12. I thought those 3D asteroids were just amazing. It doesn't date very well,
though. And they form the word who, though.
Yeah.
That's just cool.
Shouldn't the emphasis be on the word doctor?
Well, that's a whole lot. They didn't have the money to have for 6.
5 letters. Yeah, I know.
For 6 letters. They can only do 3.
Yeah. I love this Java thing they do.
Yeah, this was ironic because this was really before... Because I remember in Knoxville they had this place called the Java Hut. And I was like, oh, crap. I'm going
there.
There
was Cafe Java and all this stuff.
Let's go down to Java. No, I don't want to go there.
I actually remember that. We used to go down there with friends, and I used to, like, giggle with some glee, because I was a bizarre 12-year-old.
Yes.
Like, we're going to Java.
Ghastly wailing, I love the...
The subtitles, I find the subtitles are done very well on the Doctor Who discs.
I just find it's...
But the sound effects are usually described amusingly, like, ghastly wailing.
So, and here we go, we're down in the ship, which, interestingly enough, this is something we were talking about as we were chowing down before we got to this.
Oh, we eat?
Yeah.
No. This is the bit where I...
think it's...
Open.
A little
square of chocolate.
Have you learned nothing from Roman Polanski? I mean, other than, you know, don't date 12-year-olds. Isn't he the one who can't come back in the United States because, like, he'll be arrested?
Rapes, yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, but anyway, Mark... No, it's not Mark Platt on the DVD who talks about it. It's Andrew Cartmell, who looked a lot younger than I thought he would. I don't know how old I thought he was when he did it. He must have been like 12, because he only looks like 20-something on the DVD.
Dude, it was only 15 years ago.
God, yeah, but, you know, he was only 12. I mean,
he was probably in his mid-20s or something.
But he actually filled in some of the gaps of the story, such as that I had always wondered, even though as much as I've loved this, and if certain people in Talking Doctor Who get hold of this commentary, they will use it against me, because I always go, oh, it makes perfect sense! You're just not paying enough attention, damn it! Which is my standard response of, yeah, I don't have enough time to think about it, and I don't care. But he talks about, because I was kind of confused as to, did the ship come to Earth, and then pick up Nimrod, and then leave?
Right, because I'd always assumed that they kind of came to Earth before man developed.
Yes.
As part of their survey.
Yes.
Launched here, sent Josiah out as the experiment, had him develop into the dominant life form.
Yeah.
With light dormant.
Yeah.
And Josiah decided to take over. Yeah. Cardinal says it a little differently.
Basically what he says happened was, they came, they did a survey, and left. And Josiah went out and did whatever. I guess maybe he's Zaw from the first episode. And anyway...
maybe he is the fire.
Yes. But then they left, and then Josiah and Control took over the ship and locked up Light and came back to Earth because he liked it so much.
Which you would never assume from...
No, and the story doesn't really make it all that abundantly clear because, you know, we're watching with the subtitles on. And I tried watching, you know, many times trying to... And I guess now what I need to do is go back and rewatch it, having that information and see.
Mm-hmm.
There must be like one quick line where Josiah says that. I guess what we don't have is Josiah going master and explaining his entire plan to everybody.
Right, it's what Cardinal says, that there really should have been a thing where the Doctor like took Inspector McKenzie aside and like explained to him in words of one syllable.
Yeah, since Ace doesn't ask for explanations, Ace assumes she knows what's going on.
Right.
Oh, the word wicked.
And
I did not... I guess I sort of inferred that they had done something to Gwendolyn's parents.
Well, I assume they just killed them.
Yeah.
Sent them to Java.
Yeah.
One of the... I think one of the the reasons I like Ghost Light. Like I said, it's intelligent.
Yeah.
But despite its complexity, you know that even if all the information isn't there on screen,
yeah,
it was thought out.
Yeah.
And that makes it very different from something like...
Delton the Bannerman?
I was going to say Father's Day.
Oh, okay.
In that, I don't feel Father's Day was ever thought out. How it worked.
That is true.
Ghost Light was thought out, how it worked, even if it's unbelievably complex. I think that's why I like Ghost Light.
Well, it's interesting that, you know, they spent 8 months writing a story, and then J&T said, no, you can't do that. And so then they came up with another one. So you get the feeling that, like, Andrew Cartmell and Mark Platt probably sat around in his office and debated this story for hours.
Yeah, that's right. The first thing Mark Platt pitched was Cat's Cradle, which eventually became Cat's Cradle Times Crucible, the new adventure.
Yes. It's been so long since I read that, I don't remember a lot about
it. Oh, it's quite bizarre. Ace is inside the infected TARDIS.
Yeah, I don't think you could have done that on the Doctor Who budget.
The Doctor himself isn't in a whole lot of it. Then he apparently submitted some sort of Russian story that they didn't want to do. And then Lung Barrow, which of course eventually became Lung Barrow!
Yes, which is quite a complex story.
A very complex story. Mark Platt is known for his complex stories. And I'm actually surprised to see that he hasn't really done any other TV work besides Doctor Who. And I'm not sure if he's really done any other writing work outside of Doctor Who, because he really writes, I think, quite interesting, complex stories. There's Ghost Light. But since Ghost Light, there's also been his two new adventures, one of which I truly didn't like and one of which I truly did like. You can guess which is which.
Has he written any...
And he's now done several big finishes.
Has he done any Eighth Doctor novels?
No.
He hasn't really done any novels since Lung Barrow, has he?
That's correct.
Whales in Agony.
But he has done Lugaroo, which was a Peter Davison audio, which I felt was very good. Spare Parts, which everybody really enjoys, sort of a Genesis of the Cybermen type story.
Yeah, that's kind of one that's held up as one of the greatest audios ever.
Yeah. And one of my personal favorite big finishes, the Doctor Who Unbound Old Mortality, which features Jeffrey Balladin as the one where the Doctor never left Gallifrey.
Oh, yeah.
It has some things in common with Lung Barrow.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And then its sequel, A Storm of Angels.
I don't think I've listened to Storm of Angels yet.
That's also quite good. It's more complicated and perhaps not as tight.
I think it magically appeared on my hard drive somehow.
As
I don't know how.
And that one is what would happen if the Doctor just ran around and, you know, enjoyed changing history. All of which I think are just fantastic stories. All of his big finishes have been really interesting.
Yeah.
And so, certainly a guy I'm always interested to hear more from.
Well, maybe he's in one of the Doctor Who groups online somewhere.
Maybe. When I see that a story is being written by him, I get intrigued. Which I don't always do for writers, you know? Particularly ones who
Josiah
are associated
is
with
peeling.
Him. Josiah is peeling because he's going to evolve.
Again.
He's going to finally evolve. And that's something that I didn't get for the longest time, is the reason he can't look at light is because he's not fully evolved yet.
Yeah.
It's not like he's blind or something. He just can't take the light yet.
And there's Gwendolyn again.
And so now he's going to evolve into a fully fledged Victorian human being. That's a nice line. He sounded a little husky.
And there's the house, which never really existed.
Reverend Matthews is about to get his due.
So he's shooting the queen. The picture of the queen.
Right.
So Josiah's great and noble plan is that he wants to take over all of England by killing the queen.
Queen, which wouldn't allow you to take over the throne.
Yeah.
We talked about this a hair before we started commentarizing, whatever it is.
Blathering.
That's good. And something I pointed out is Josiah may be going more by, like, the laws of animals.
Yeah.
You know, the laws of animal forms as opposed to human society, because in an animal pack, if you kill, you know, the head lion or whatever, you become the head lion.
Either that or, you know, or he hasn't... You know, it could be part of his, you know, even though he's evolved on the outside. If you look back at how he looked at...
And he may still think as
you know, going back to the reference to an unearthly child.
He may not have fully evolved into something that.
Well, he may not have. He may not have seen the social structures evolve from the time when he took Nimrod, where if Nimrod killed the head of the tribe, then he would be the head of the tribe.
Very true. Yes.
So, just because he develops outside and can see light doesn't mean he's developed fully intellectually.
Right. Well, it's
even though he is a good intellectual adversary for the Doctor.
But it's like what happens with light eventually. Yeah. Light just can't keep up because things keep changing.
Yes. Everything changes. I'd sing that country song, but nobody wants to hear that.
Thank you. Well, something I find is interesting, and I know this goes back to one of my pet little things, but Doctor Who is a, for the most part, in my opinion, a rigidly secular program.
Yes.
British programming generally is. They have much more separation of religion and entertainment.
Yes.
Or religion and really anything else. Their religion is much more private. How's
okay.
that? So whereas on Star Trek you might actually have Captain Kirk talk about God or something.
Yeah, but not very often.
Not very often.
Yeah.
Or at least talk about a higher power or something.
Yeah.
That pretty much never happens in British television.
Well, there's a lot of, on Star Trek, there's a lot of debunking God.
There is.
Because, you know, Gene Roddenberry was atheistic.
Was he?
Yeah, he didn't believe in God.
That's interesting.
He felt that eventually that humanity would evolve beyond the need for religion.
Interesting.
That's why on original Star Trek they take on so many of those gods, and Captain Kirk proves them all to be not real.
Huh.
See? You've learned something new today.
I did. But yes. Doctor Who, like most British television, really doesn't touch it one way or another too much.
Yeah.
If there's a false god, it's not really, you know, it's something like the Doctor has accidentally been made a god.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
Or there's a computer.
Or there's a computer. And it's obviously not God because, oh, we know what it really is.
Yes.
But just as it never really talks about religion, it never really, like, debunks it either.
No.
Too much. I mean, there was talk at one point there was going to be a Hartnell story where they found the face of God. Or what they believed to be the face of God, and that never happened.
No, oh, so they were going to make Star Trek V.
Yeah. What could God want?
What does God want with a
Star Trek? The TARDIS.
Yes. Yeah, but, you know, Hartnell's not the same delivering that line as Shatner.
No.
Nobody is.
Well, wait, what's McCoy's line in that one? He has some great line, you know, like, you know, what would God do with the power of a starship kind of thing?
Yes.
That'd be much more what Hartnell would be doing. And that's my cell phone.
Wow, we've never had a cell phone go off in the middle of a commentary before.
And now it's going to be turned off.
Now you...
Bye now.
Anyway, so Sorry, Ace people. Is waking up.
Well, no, so, but this is one of the few stories that actually, you know, the Doctor is in favor of evolution.
Yeah.
So it's a very rare story to actually talk about any religious or irreligious element whatsoever here at the very end of the show. Which I think is
but it's not really all that, you know, it's not like they're going
to... But it's not really about evolution. I mean, logically, City of Death is more about evolution than this is. In terms of the Big Bang.
Yes.
Evolution.
Well, you know, they go back to the Big Bang and Castrovalvo.
That's right, they do, don't they?
Which, you know, based on what you told me about Tegan and Nyssa hanging out in the TARDIS, going back to the Big Bang is ironic.
It's event one.
Oh, the double entendres.
So yeah, those stories actually have more to do with it than this does, which is really much more about just evolution in general, which, you know, moths evolve.
Yes.
I do think it's interesting the very last show of the series was about something evolving.
Yes. And the series was going away. Okay.
Oh, and then the very next... You know, the time we saw it, it was chock full of Christ imagery.
Yes. In case you missed all that subtext.
Yeah.
There was like a 2x4 to the head.
That was text, my friend.
No, that was like bold, super, like, Helic Veda 36-point text. It wasn't even sub. It was like, hello!
I am the text. I will be your text today.
Yes. You know, Sophie Aldrin gets to change clothes a lot in this story for just three parts.
I kind of liked her in the suit. Sorry.
No, I'm just saying, she has a lot of outfits.
She does, and this dress doesn't fit her.
Okay, now, why, okay, she's showing as much skin as she did in her earlier outfit.
Right.
Up around the neck area. So why did they all get offended by, maybe it's because she was wearing pants.
Yeah.
But yeah,
she's wearing a gentleman's suit.
No. When she first gets there, they look at her clothes and like, oh, you're showing too much. And I'm like, going,
oh, that.
I'm like, what? She's showing just as much here.
Well, I think it's because it's a little more curvaceous.
Yeah. Not that, I don't appreciate it because I, find Sophie Aldridge to be an attractive woman.
Do you?
Yes.
Interesting.
I don't know why.
Can't say I do. I mean, she's not unattractive, but not really my type.
But,
I can't believe we're having this discussion on air.
But, But, I just like, and I think the dress looks, it's not the most flattering, but it's not the worst outfit.
Well, the problem is mostly it doesn't fit her.
Well,
it doesn't fit her shoulders, for one thing.
Well, not to be, rude to her, but she just doesn't quite have enough to hold up the front.
That's nice.
I'm just saying that.
I mean, she has broad shoulders, and they really don't fit in that dress. So.
Now, Perry in this dress. Nicola, call me, I'm just saying. I think it's been like 3 or 4 commentaries since I did that, so I had to throw that in there.
Nice.
Can you imagine what it's going to be like when we do a Colin Baker story?
Oh, God. It's pain!
Oh, we should do 2 doctors, because we could you get to see that part where she runs down the hill.
Oh, and it like, collapses onto the ground and everything bounces?
I'm sorry, what? Were we talking about Ghost
Life? Anyway, Ghost Life!
It's a story with the doctor and Ace.
Alright.
That was a little bit of McCoy overacting a little bit there.
The knees lift! He does it later. He actually spoils, in my opinion, a really good cliffhanger.
Yeah.
It's like, lights!
Yeah. He did, and I'd hate to see the ones where he wasn't, where they pulled him back from.
Oh, yeah. This actually, in Live 34, which I just listened to, New Big Finish, he takes down the villain at the end, over an intercom system, and he actually does, this, oh, do shut up!
Yeah.
Thing, which is fairly painful. Except they make it more of a joke after a while, so the villain keeps talking and finally goes, shut up! Which gets kind of funny.
I'm going to have to listen to that.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Now, it's interesting that he kind of manipulates Nimrod, too, a little bit.
He kind of manipulates everybody in this.
Yeah, well, He's just at the center. He's like a spider in the center of the web pulling strings.
Oddly Evil of the Daleks-esque.
Yes.
Because that story also took place in a creepy house with...
Victorian times.
In Victorian times, with, this whole staff of characters. Not quite such strange characters.
Yes.
But hey, Maxtable wanted the Daleks to change lead into gold, which...
Yeah.
Why the Daleks, exactly?
I think because the Daleks were promising whatever he wanted to help get the Doctor, because they wanted the Doctor.
Why not ask them how they're doing this whole, time travel thing? But...
Well, you can't sell admission to that. You can't...
I guess not.
Meanwhile, the husks are hanging out in the basement. Thanks, G&T. Mm-hmm. Now here comes Control.
And incidentally, I never have figured out, and I've never read anything that explains why Control calls Ace Ratkin. Never understood it. Never got it.
I thought for a long time Ratkin was like a lost person from the expedition. Before I went, oh, Josiah Control, and there were only 3. I thought Ratkin had somehow died on Earth, and that was why they were staying.
Oh, okay.
But that has nothing, that really,
that
theory doesn't hold any weight.
I have no idea why they call it Ratkin.
Mark Platt should have explained that here in his script.
He doesn't, and he doesn't explain it on the DVD either.
Well, that's not very nice of him.
Ooh, here's McCoy and the cockroach.
Call Mark Platt up and tell him that I want an explanation now. Because they called him all the time from the set. I'm sure he won't mind just calling him 16 years later going, Mark, by the way, what the hell?
Well, I could write Andrew Pixley. I bet he'd respond.
Josiah. It's interesting that the villain kind of spends the third episode, most of the second episode, off camera.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then he gets completely subsumed by light in the final episode, which light is quite interesting. For a character who has maybe 20 minutes of screen time, light really leaves an impact.
Oh, yes.
And I really like creepy stories like this that aren't, blood and guts, but have that kind of horror, scary element to them. A little bit of a shiver.
And here's the minister. He's been turned into a monkey.
Mm-hmm.
He's a monkey!
Okay, monkey.
I seek the truth from the burning one.
This is one of the first stories that I bought on VHS. And the sound mix still wasn't right.
Yeah, I don't think they... But it was better.
It was better. Yes. I could actually hear what they were saying.
If not, you had the closed captioning.
think that one had closed captioning, yeah. And I actually have it autographed by McCoy.
Yeah, I've got a friend who I believe has some kind of hearing, significant hearing loss. And he's very upset that all the Doctor Who VHS are not closed captioned, because he can't...
There's like a significant portion of them that aren't.
Because he can't...
I think all the Warner ones are.
He can't hear anything. He cannot hear well enough.
Right.
Oh, now is this the scene that like they did many, many times? Where
she lost her dress? No, that's
No. Well, where, like, apparently, like, the crew really liked watching...
No, this is later.
Sophie Aldred
really
and...
have a cat fight in the third episode?
I was trying to remember where that was, exactly. But, you know, where they...
Yeah, I'll point it out when we get there.
Okay. I'm sure you will.
Well, thanks a lot.
Well, I would, because, you know, hey. I mean, let's face it. Like, Jennifer, who plays Gwendolyn? Let's look in the book here. But I think she's very well cast, and
she
I like her.
All the cast is really very well cast.
It's interesting. Do we have time to get in? Okay, we do have time. When this first aired, I remember there was a lot of talk that Ian Hogg would be a very good doctor.
Really?
Yes. Like they were.
He's apparently a Doctor Who fan.
That they had him in the running to be the next Doctor.
Interesting.
They wanted him. The fans all said that when McCoy left, they should get Ian Hogg in.
He's good. I think he might have been good.
He'd have been an interesting choice.
I've seen him in some other things. He's a good actor.
What other things has he been in? I don't think I've seen... Because he's more of a stage actor, from what I understand.
If you watch enough, like, mystery shows, like Prime Suspect or...
I'm not sure I would recognize him, because when I saw him on the DVD...
He's in Touching Evil.
He looked a lot different.
Yeah, it's because he doesn't have these, you know, Victorian hair and mustache thing.
So I just wonder if I saw Catherine Schlesinger, if I would recognize her in other things.
I mean, Ian Hogg generally plays... At least that I've seen, plays very working class characters.
And here he's a gentleman.
Now, I think he's done quite a bit of Shakespeare as well, but for some reason when he's on television, he plays, you know, fishermen and things.
And here comes Control. Which, this must have been fun to play Control.
I
just
think
totally
it would be
alien.
Really hard to play Control. Because she has to keep evolving totally all the time.
Now, this was one... Why didn't they do an extended release on the VHS, I wonder?
For the same reason they didn't do it on the DVD. Is that all the extended footage is time-coded.
Oh, so it would take a lot of work to have it...
Not a lot of work, it's impossible.
Yeah, well, that stinks.
It's not good enough quality.
Now, see, when I first saw this, when I saw it in feature format, I thought the cliffhanger would be light coming out of the elevator.
I did, too, actually.
You know, the revelation of not just light coming out.
Yep, I thought that, too.
But that shows you what I know.
Anyway, the nice thing about these DVDs is, you know, often I'm watching them late at night.
Yes.
And my next-door neighbors really don't like significant noise.
Well.
And it's not that I think you do too much noise, but I worry about it.
Yeah.
And so I often watch them with the caption on, just in case I lose little bits of the dialogue. Yeah. And I've noticed the DVD subtitling is very well done.
Oh, well, they do a good job.
I've seen some pretty crappy subtitles and...
The restoration team does a good job on these DVDs. They work really, really hard.
The one time I've thought it was a bit off is the Lost in Time set, those audio-only episodes for the Crusade and the Moonbase, are not subtitled, which doesn't make sense any way you look at it, because it means not only can the hearing-impaired fans not enjoy them, those of us who can hear but are maybe having trouble following the audio-only episodes can't really do it either.
They really should have had those narrated over.
Well, I know there wasn't time for that, but I'm confused as to why they couldn't subtitle them. But that's a secondary concern. Every time I've ever watched a regular Doctor Who DVD with the subtitles on, I've been very impressed.
Yeah.
Because sometimes they have to really truncate lines.
Yeah.
They capture the essence of them, I think, very well.
So we're talking over episode 3, so we'd better wrap episode 2 up.
Just keep on going.
Okay.
I'll make a two-parter on this.
Wow, our fans will be amazed and thrilled.
Yes.
All one of them. So,
well,
anyway.
The reason I put these into small files is for people with, you know, low connection.
Bandwidth?
Yeah, bandwidth and stuff.
That is true.
Because, I mean, it's 75 minutes long. Why wouldn't you want to listen to it in one chunk if you could?
I don't know. I mean, I don't like to watch Doctor Who in one chunk.
That's true.
So.
Well... You people just have to forgive me. You'll have to watch parts 2 and 3 together. Ha ha!
Or they can pause their MP3 player.
Or that.
You know. Though, you know, you really don't have to actually watch these with the episodes.
No,
if you've seen them enough.
I mean, if you've seen them enough.
But, you know. But we have fun. And maybe some of you are wondering, how do we pick the stories that we do?
How do we pick the stories we do?
We pick the ones. We either pick ones that we really, really like and can talk a lot about. Oh, here comes Light. First appearance. His music is very good.
And for the late 80s, I think his appearance is very impressive.
Now, I wish he had been on the DVDs, because I wanted to know if this was, you know, how he came up with the voice of being very high-pitched when he does speak.
And very low at times, too. He really does a range.
You know, but I guess it's just, you know, you kind of expect his voice to be very booming. And
right.
Yeah. I am
but
Light.
It's very high.
But it's, you know, it's very kind of
and
more
pitiful.
Feminine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not to say that feminine is weak. It just, you
but
know.
It's not what you expect from this, this image. I do think the electronic aura actually works very well. It's one of the few electronic effects I've ever seen in Doctor Who I think is really good. It really fits him instead of wings.
See, I like this. His high, gentle voice.
Mm-hmm. And the reflective metal.
Boy, I can't imagine how hard that must have been to film all this.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm just... Or the post-production effects of him glowing.
There's one a little later where he shows atoms in his hand.
Yeah.
And that's a little cartoon, but it's actually quite impressive. In a lot of ways, this is like one of the best special effects stories Doctor Who ever had.
But again, it's also a Victorian house, which the BBC is very good at the period drama.
Well, I think the effects are used sparingly, but extremely well. And Light is a really interesting character.
You know, and I find it interesting, you know, the pacing. As I thought, you know, how can they make this a four-part story? Could they make it a four-part story and still have the momentum sustained? And I think maybe it would have ruined it, because when would you have Light show up?
Yeah, I think the pacing, because they would have had to have still kept Light to the last episode.
Yeah, and then the thing is, the last episode is so dense as it is.
Yeah.
They almost needed to extend the last episode 10 minutes.
Right, yeah.
Rather than extend to four parts. Because if you have Light show up halfway through and start changing your, you know... I think another 10 minutes with Light running around, and then, because at the end where he decides to destroy Earth and why...
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite as clear. It's kind of a rush. That may be one of the bigger criticisms. It's kind of a rush. If you had another 10 minutes for him to come to that decision and then destroy you, it would make a lot more sense.
Right, yeah.
Sure, see? But this is why we're not writers for the show.
So, how is it we pick our stories again? You can start to say, and then...
We either pick something that we both enjoy.
Really like. In this case.
Yes. Something that has a nostalgia value, like the TV movie. Or something that we disagree on, like Legopolis.
Yep.
So, you know, I'm sure you all are wondering, like, well, why do they... And then another thing is, how accessible are we to it?
Right. Do we have the DVD?
The other thing is, it has to be something, you know, that, like, I'm not sure I could do a commentary for Web Planet, because we do spend a lot of time before the commentary reading information and... You know, if it's not a story that you at least have some modicum of enjoyment for...
It's very hard to...
You know, I can't imagine watching Web Planet two or three times to get ready to do a commentary.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I try to always at least watch each story once before we do it. Sometimes more.
This one we came in a little bit colder, because we'd been talking about it for most weeks. Like, oh, let's just do it.
Yeah.
But I've seen it enough.
Well, we've talked about it so much. We've both seen it so much. I saw it a couple months ago. And it's not one of those stories where you just desperately have to remember each note of the story, because it's a short story. It's quite short. But it's, you know, the confusion is part of it.
Yes. Did she have to eat a bug here?
She had to eat a licorice bug.
Okay. Now somebody in here has to eat a bug, don't they?
She did. She ate a licorice bug.
I thought somebody had to eat a real bug.
No.
Oh. And there's Light.
Oh, and this bit coming up here, it took me like 4 viewings, and I used to take my videos into my dad's conference room at work. Sometimes I'd have to go in with him on the weekends when he had to work.
Yeah.
And I took this one, and I didn't notice this bit until I was watching on this huge conference screen.
Yes.
And I went, oh my god, that's her arm.
Oh, okay.
It took me like 4 viewings to notice it. I was so involved in the story. I was a weird kid.
Well, you know, I'm not going to say anything, because I was a weird kid, too. I'm still a weird adult, but not weird like going to jail weird.
Not weird like... like weird.
Yes. But this is good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This is, interesting, okay, I didn't point this out at the time, but McCoy had kind of got tired of having the hat. And you notice he early on passes the hat off to Nimrod for the story.
I think it depends on how much he feels he needs props in a story.
I guess he didn't feel like he really needed any for this one. That.
Well, he's got stuff to play with in the story itself, and there's a lot of density to it, so.
And I guess, you know, you don't want any other distractions, because that would be that would maybe take you out of the story, the doctor wearing the hat, wandering around a Victorian house.
Yeah.
It might take you too far out of the story.
And, well, plus he just doesn't need things to do with his hands. I mean, Silver Nemesis and stuff, he needs stuff to... because he's outside and there's really nothing to work with.
Hell, Silver Nemesis, I need something to do to distract me from the tedium of the story.
Because he's got cockroaches and, you know, little drawers he's working with and all sorts of stuff.
Which is interesting that the...
and it's not like the focus is always on him.
Yeah. Here comes Gwendolyn to take her to Jabba.
Comes a candle to light you to bed.
Yes. I like Redford's trying to pick up control. Hey, baby, how you doing?
Yeah.
You know, I'll make you the finest lady like. So was control going to help Josiah kill the queen?
No.
I don't know why I got that impression. He's going to use Redford since Cooper to shoot her.
Yeah.
Because he was convincing her that she was some kind of prey. And I wasn't sure how they were going to get close enough to do it. There was going to be the big party.
Maybe party, and I guess Redford's Ben Cooper is some sort of...
high muckety muck.
Yeah, Lord something of the crown kind of thing.
And since they didn't have metal detectors in the Victorian times.
Oh, yeah.
Here's where the plot comes out of what Josiah is doing.
And like you said, it is convoluted. I mean, there is no way he could simply assassinate the queen and get away with running the empire.
Yeah. Unless... and if you kind of got the impression that maybe Josiah was doing something politically behind the scenes to set himself up to ascend...
something that I kind of assumed when I was younger is that the reason he's killing the queen is to then send everything into...
chaos.
Chaos, and he'll become the dominant life form.
And he'll come out and take control.
Yeah.
That could work. I guess that's just, you know, I'm watching the new Battlestar Galactica, and so if you haven't watched the new Battlestar Galactica and you haven't seen all of Season 2 yet...
which I haven't.
Well, at one point, a character manipulates things to position himself to...
here's the scene where Ace falls out of her dress.
Hello. Oh, this is where they're fighting. This is where they filmed it many, many times.
Right, yeah, because they really have quite a little spat.
Oh, they have all three of them, not just...
yeah, but it's mostly Ace and Gwendolyn.
Yes, which, you know, Gwendolyn's kind of interesting. She looks like... it's one of those things of, like, you ever, like, you're walking around and you see someone that you... looks like someone that you knew. That you knew...
yeah.
Gwendolyn looks like somebody I know, but I can't quite place who it is. It's
right,
like a person.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's part of her quality. And here's Nimrod. Doesn't Nimrod come back in one of the novels?
No, the Big Finishes have a character named Nimrod, but it's not the same Nimrod.
Okay. Now, this was one of those novelizations that, I think the McCoy-Year novelizations overall are some of the best.
You know, I've never read this one. I've got it, but I've never read it.
It adds a lot to the story.
Okay.
It will help you make more sense.
Because the Fenric one was... yeah, there's just little atoms.
Which I didn't know.
Microbes, sorry.
Yes. I assumed that there was something in the Bible, the Doctor Who Bible, about Ace burning down the house, and I had no idea that Mark Benarinovich had written that part of Ace burning down a house before they... to tie into Ghostlight, but he had no idea.
Mm.
So it was one of those serendipity things.
And then they later expanded on that in Survival of New Adventures.
Yes. So, it's good stuff. Piercing swoosh. There's a pretty high body count in this one.
There is.
Which goes back to our we had a theory one time that we like stories where everyone dies.
Yeah.
And not a lot of people live through this one.
Nope.
Now she says Ratkin again here.
Yeah, and I don't quite get it.
But then again, you know, I didn't quite get Gordon Bennett, but I don't think that it's Ratkin.
Gordon Bennett's a swear word.
Yeah, no, but is, like, Ratkin some kind of a Victorian word?
No, I don't think so. We'll look it up afterwards, but I...
yes. if we'd been really on top of it, we'd look up before. But ha ha ha, no, we're not on top of things.
I don't know. If you know the answer to why Rankin is used, write and tell us. We'll be really interested to know.
We'll give you a prize.
What's the prize we'll give him, Michael?
I don't know. I'm not going to say.
Okay, we'll find a prize.
Yes. We'll send you a commentary before anyone else. You can be cool.
Maybe you can pick a commentary for us.
Oh, dear God. Someone's going to win, and they're going to make us do Web Planet. Yes. We might actually be setting up a poll after we run through all the doctors.
Yes, we're going to get through all 10 of the doctors, and then we're going to...
Let you pick. With some guided help. We're not going to just let you pick a story for us.
But you're going to, like, you know...
There'll be a poll. And maybe we'll just ignore it. Or maybe we'll pay attention to it.
No.
We wouldn't do that.
Oh, we're going
to
fight again.
Ooh, more fighting. I think this was very popular as well.
I can see why.
Well, and Ace still has her boots on. I think that's hilarious.
Yeah. I like his line, the natives are restless tonight.
Yeah. And we find out Mrs. Pritchard is her mom. Hmm? Which is an interesting development.
Yep. I also think it's interesting that the Doctor and McCoy... Doctor and Ace, for most of the story... haven't really got any allies.
No.
Nimrod is sort of an ally, but not
Nimrod worships
really.
The Doctor. Because he thinks the Doctor knows his gods.
Right, but he's still not really that helpful.
He is.
And Fen Cooper is sort of negligibly helpful because he's insane.
He is.
So there's really not anyone you could totally trust. So for a lot of the story, the Doctor and Ace are just on their own. Which is very unusual. They're used to, you know... arriving in a situation and being able to find allies against the big bad villain.
Yeah. Which is, this maybe goes to the manipulation of the Doctor. The Doctor manipulates events so that Josiah is, he's pulled the people together and now he's just going to sit back and watch
everything
slowly break apart. See, he's taking away Josiah's power.
Right.
Because he's gotten rid of Gwendolyn, who does the killing for him.
Right.
Right now he's getting rid of Mrs. Pritchard, who she's his iron fist. You know, he's the one she sends him to do. He sends her to do things.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't want to. He just sits there and pulls strings. And now the Doctor is the one pulling all the strings.
And he does it very subtly.
Yes.
Although not enough to save everyone, or most of them.
You know, and so now the Doctor says, "Oh, I knew it was a trap." And he willingly walked into it.
I mean, that is one of the more curious aspects of this, is that the Doctor does not try to save Gwendolyn. He doesn't try and save Mrs. Pritchard. He doesn't, you know, try and save Mackenzie.
He essentially
makes choices that...
Yeah.
And I think that influences the new adventures a great deal.
And I just wonder if that's some of the evil that Ace feels in the house. The Doctor chooses not to save life. Because maybe if he had saved them, you know, then she wouldn't burn down the house.
Right.
He knows she has to burn down the house.
Right. And this is the last scene filmed for Doctor Who.
I thought the last one was the one on the stairs.
This is the last scene filmed.
Oh. Maybe the last one with McCoy was the last one near the stairs at the very end. Where he says wicked.
Yeah, this is the very last scene they shot. And,
Oh, and here comes light. Goodbye, Gwendolyn. We were just enjoying you.
So you know he's going to speak with deep growl. That's effective.
Well, he's getting really ticked off.
You'll never change again.
And they turn to stone. Now that's pretty cool for a Doctor Who effect.
Oh, yeah.
See, I think this has been 10 more minutes.
Oh, yeah.
With light. Because now it's spinning rapidly towards the conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't exactly slow and ponderous to start with. It was pretty fast-paced anyway.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's going about 90. Whereas before
it was
going...
See, there's no clear directive from the throne, no discipline.
Yeah.
He can provide a new order. So maybe his plan really is just to send England to chaos by killing the Queen.
Yeah. See, I like this where the Doctor has introduced things so that Josiah's plan is unraveling. I'm not going to take you, I'm going to take control. Yeah, and Control will not play along with Josiah's plan to kill the Queen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes.
That's a nice line.
Now we're pulling a Hartnell commentary and just getting caught up in the story.
Yeah, sorry.
So we're like, wow. Josiah's very mad now because he's lost his invitation.
Well, what else is there to mention?
Could mention the dark coat that McCoy has worn all season.
I like that coat.
Then he goes from that kind of beige coat to the brown coat.
The gray coat, yeah.
Which I think the dark brown coat is more effective. Better. But also, overall, shows the dark turn of the Doctor.
Ooh, here's the cream of Scotland Yard.
Yeah, the primal soup.
Yummy.
And then Light has some.
He also changed his tie and scarf to the coat. It's darker now.
Yes.
His hatband as well.
Well, I think it looks better.
Oh, it does. But I didn't realize until recently that he actually changed all of it. I thought it was just the coat, but not true.
Well, you know, he had to look good.
Yeah. In large part, it's a good outfit, except for that damn jumper.
And notice Light glows less as the story goes along.
Yes, the more annoyed he becomes. Now, interestingly, Neil Gaiman's Neverwhere.
Yes.
I read the book first, as did you.
Yes.
And then I saw the BBC version, and I actually expected the Angel Islington to be much more like Light than he is. Because in the BBC version, he's just sort of a guy in a robe. Like,
oh, they couldn't afford the glowy. They had to spend all on Doctor Who.
I know, but I mean, I remember thinking, oh, I wish he would have been more like Light.
Yeah, see, because now he starts to glow.
Yeah.
Not like for the Doctor throws in things that didn't exist.
Yeah. This is yet another example of McCoy talking somebody to death.
Well, he talks them into destroying themselves.
He does this a fair bit. In a lot of ways, I don't think it's that effective. I mean, why is he talking the Supreme Dalek to death? For instance, because, you know, it just sort of spins itself out of control.
Because the Doctor can't kill things until the Ninth Doctor.
Or until the Seventh Doctor, when he blows up whole planets.
Well, that's different. He doesn't have to face them.
Sure. But I do think it works really well here because he spins Light's world so completely out of control. Because things are evolving rapidly beyond him. So I think it's actually a very fitting end for Light. And as Mark Platt says, it doesn't necessarily mean Light is dead. He's just filed away.
So Light could come back for Ghost Light 2!
I kind of like it a little bit open-ended. I don't think he needs to come back.
Well, you know, Russell could get bored, and maybe Light will be the big villain who comes in for season 29.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Somehow I don't think Russell T. Davies is going to go back to the J&T years to draw villains from. Except for maybe the Master.
A lot of people thought Fenric was last year's villain with the wolf thing, and that was just a bit...
Yeah, well, it was called Wolf Time originally. That was the...
Yaru, I mean, that's...
Yeah. Well, you know. It would have been better than what they came up with.
Anyway, back to Ghost Light.
You know, less Mickey. So here we are, we're in the ship, so...
With these husks that are, I guess, dead now.
Yeah.
But I like it's very open-ended. You don't really know what happened to these people when they take off in this...
in
Carl Sagan's ship of the imagination. Like a knife through melted butter.
Yeah, I sort of imagined, I wondered if they would... You know, every Star Trek episode, they'll mention, oh, I like this crew. And they've had a lot of the Star Trek novels that recently here have stories about crews that we've seen, like, briefly on screen to expand them and make them more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I often wonder if somebody out there hasn't thought about, you know what, if I could write some adventures of Control and Nimrod and Red Furs. There's probably fanfic out there that has, like, whole adventures for them.
Maybe.
As they have their wacky fun throughout the universe.
And this is basically Josiah turning into the same base creature that Control was.
Yep.
Because he's no longer dominant. He's natural selection. He's been sort of...
unnaturally selected.
Yeah. He's won the Darwin Award!
Yay! It's amazing Nimrod can now fly a ship.
Well, you know, he can also talk.
Yeah.
So.
Doctor, you're not in our catalog. It's supposed to be mysterious. And then Doctor, of course, leaves. He's done what he came to do. Whatever that is. And now he's leaving.
Make Ace face or fear.
That's right. I guess this was more disturbing than the clowns.
Yeah, when they've already gone in the ship of the imagination.
Yes, cutting through knife like butter.
Yeah. I mean, cutting through butter like a knife?
Well, you know.
Did or I cutting say through space like knife through butter?
I guess so, sure. Yeah. Sure, why not?
And here's Light, he's still trying.
Yeah.
And failing. And that's the end of him.
Now, I wonder, but this could have been harder for them to insert a speech like they did at the end of Survival 4 if this had actually been the last story aired. You know? Which I think it works better. I think it does build a theme, you know, a theme to the season.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the season actually, you know, this story, I'm not sure this story would have been quite as effective after Krisha Fenric.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree with you.
So J&T actually did something right.
Wow.
I know. Actually, we spend so much time ragging on them.
So, this is strange. This is like the one story beyond K.S. Randrazani that I really think is a classic. And it's wicked.
And he improved that line on the set.
Yes, he did.
So.
Good choice.
Thank you, Mr. McCoy.
Well, that was
miss you.
Highly enjoyable.
Goodbye, Doctor. Okay, anyway. Sorry.
That was cute.
Yes.
But, well, thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you for spending 75 minutes of your life with us.
There are a lot of fan commentaries out there these days since we started.
God, yeah, boy, they're copying our success, aren't they?
But you're but you're listening to us.
Yes, even though we've invited others to join us, and they never get back to us.
But you're still listening to us, and that's really cool.
So we thank you.
We thank you, and pretty soon we'll be showing up a party at your house.
We will?
Yeah.
Well, is that what people may not listen to us anymore if we threaten to come over to their homes.
I'll show you the phone booth in my backyard.
There's Gary Downey. He just died. He was J&T's special friend.
You could attempt to be a little more respectful for the dead.
I am being respectful. I'm sorry that he's gone. It's kind of like this weird thing of, like, you know, you read these credits and you realize that a lot of these people are gone. You know, especially if you watch the 60s Doctor Who.
Yeah, that's very true.
So,
very
you know, true. As the guys on Podtrack say, stop dying, people.
All right. But keep listening.
Yes, keep listening. And we'll see you soon.
Bye.